Welcome into Life, Love, Faith, and Family, a production of the American Association of Christian Counselors. I'm Dr. Tim Clinton.
And I'm Dr. Zach Clinton, and together we're your hosts. Thank you for joining us.
If you enjoyed today's program and you feel called to help us equip the church to provide mental health care and to help those in need, visit our foundation at aaccfoundation.org. That's aaccfoundation.org. Hey, there you're going to find a little bit more about the impact we're having in local communities to strengthen families and individuals. We're on a mission to help equip people everywhere to improve their relationship with God and the ones they love.
We'd love for you to be a part of our family. Let's bring a message of hope and encouragement to today's generations. Your gift ensures that this program and your station remain on the air.
Hey, on today's program, my son, Dr. Zach Clinton, he's joined by a great guest. Let's get started.
And let me start out by saying this. It's been a tough go over the last several years. I would say that division is at an all-time high, a lot of conflict. People are outraged. Unity feels pretty fleeting and fragile. But we don't need more opinions in this hour. We need more conviction, and we need more courageous leadership. Today's guest is someone that knows that calling very well. Bishop Kelvin Kobaris was a child prodigy pastor. He started preaching at the age of 5 years old. God had this calling on his life. But what's fascinating about him and his story is not when he started, but how he has sustained this conviction, this calling, this courage throughout generational years. What does it look like to bring unity back into culture? What does it look like to create love that is based in standing on truth? Bishop Kelvin Kobaris continues to lead, and he served in various capacities among the Big C Church, but continues to lead now as the lead pastor of New Life Church International alongside of his wife, Deidre. On top of that, he's the founder and president of Bridge Builders Network, an organization committed to uniting cultures and generations for the advancement of God's kingdom and fulfilling the prayer of Christ in John chapter 17, verse 21. Father, make us one. His life's work is centered on racial harmony, reconciliation, and building bridges in a time when so many are burning them. Bishop Kelvin Kobaris, I hope you know this. The Clintons have a lot of love for the Kobaris family. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Doc Zach. Love you, guys, too.
Bishop, you know, again, it's been a tough go the last several years. Just so many different things that are happening, whether it's school shootings, whether it's racial tension, whether it's the political divide, whether it's wars, outrage, anger, whatever it is, people are hurting. People are broken like never before. I'd love just to start off the conversation. What concerns you in this hour before we get to maybe what encourages you?
Well, as you know, the Bible writes, Timothy says, in the last days, perilous times shall come. And when there is peril that is apparent, that means that we are exposed to risk. And that's exactly what's happening here. We find that the love of men are waxing cold. And from that cold-heartedness is creating a divide that the enemy is celebrating, because that's what he's all about. Because if we're divided against one another, we can take our eyes off the real enemy, which is him, where we should be targeting. And I believe we're just living in a dark hour where everybody is so confused with the chaos and the calamities and the confusion that if we just hone back, pull back for a moment, step back from our opinions and our feelings and whatever made us feel the way we feel, and step back and see our common places and common goals, we can get along, we can heal, and we can move forward as the people that God designed us to be.
Exactly. We were designed for unity. We were designed to live as one body under Christ. And so this idea, though, there seems to be also a stirring. Although there's a lot of divide, there's a lot of division, there's a lot of outrage, there's a lot of hatred in the world today, there's also a lot of light. There's a lot of hunger. There's a lot of thirst for truth, for righteousness' sake. And we're seeing it, especially amongst the next generations. Bible sales are up like never before. You can't even keep them in stores anymore. You see this revival breaking out, whether it was Asbury College, whether it's in the movies, in the box offices. Revival is here. Bishop, what encourages you in the midst of all the chaos? We'll dive deeper into all that today. But what is encouraging you in this cultural hour?
What encourages me, 2 Chronicles 7:14, if my people who are called by my name humble themselves, pray, seek my face, turn from their wicked ways, I'll hear from my Father in heaven, forgive their sins and heal their land. And that's exactly what God's people are doing right now. We are turning to him. We're realizing that, hey, we're not perfect. Maybe we've had some things we need to adjust in this. We're repenting and we're saying, God, more than policy, more than government, more than our professions and money, we need you. And what I love the most is being led by students. And just last week at Southeastern University, to know that classes ended in revival. Revival is nonstop. It's consistent, and it's all over the world in different pockets where our young people are rising up and saying, hey, thank God for what the old timers has done, but we're standing on their shoulders, and we're taking this thing up a notch, and we're taking America back for God.
I know that there have been many people that have influenced the courageous leader that you are today. And I know that you hosted a Martin Luther King Jr. event that you invited my dad to be a part of. And, you know, this idea that darkness cannot expel darkness. Only light can do that. And so in a time where there is a lot of darkness all around us, and sometimes it can be difficult to deal with, Bishop, talk to us about what does it look like to actually be a light in this hour?
Well, I think being a light in this hour is being intentional. I mean, we can always talk about who's hateful, who's racist, who's a bigot, who is this, who's creating confusion, whatever the case may be. But I choose to find the positive out of every negative occurrence. No matter what is happening in the world, I'm looking for Jesus. I'm looking for his love. I'm looking for his light. And I realize in looking for it, it's in me. And so since the light of the world lives on the inside of me, it's up to me to create the intentional conversation, the intentional connect, the intentional communication to even walk in rooms where I might be hated and might be disliked because of my convictions and my stance, and still try to find common ground, because that's what Jesus said, that if you love me, you got to love your neighbor and love your neighbor as yourself. And if you don't love your neighbor, you can't really say that you love God.
Come on, I like this idea of intentionality, right? Being intentional to look for. You don't just get out of life what you put into it. You get out of life what you look for in it. It's the law of attraction. It's this idea. It's this self-fulfilling prophecy. And I think so often in times, we don't look for God in certain areas. And so, of course, if we're not looking for him, we're not going to find him. I remember Mark Batterson once said that you can assess the spiritual maturity of a man or a woman by whether or not they can see the miraculous in the midst of the monotonous. And so even in these hard and difficult times, if we're looking for God again, you will surely find him. Bishop, leadership is something that you're passionate about. God has gifted you and entrusted you with a lot of leadership, a lot of stewardship, a lot of shepherding. And when I look at you and I think of the passion that just exudes out of you, it's so palpable. Anytime you walk in the room, I mean, I'm ready to roll. I'm ready to jump in the boxing ring with you, Bishop. This idea here for a moment that leadership is not given, though. Leadership is taken. Leadership is something that when God presents it, you have to step into it. You have to step through the door that he spreads wide for you. Give us some just leadership lessons that you have learned throughout your years.
Well, as you said, leadership is not given. Leadership is taken. And another thing I want to add, leadership is not a game. So when God entrusts you with influence, and that's what leadership is, to influence people groups, to influence others, you need to understand that you have to walk circumspectly and very cautiously in managing such influence. Because the ideal is not to use it to promote self, but to use it to bring people to God, to bring people to his agenda that unites us and that calls us together to fulfill his purpose. And so in understanding leadership, if there are leaders listening to me, which I know there will be, you need to understand that if God has entrusted you with a space where people look up to you, whether it's a small group or whether they're masses, you need to understand that no matter how much they try to pump up your ego, stay at the feet of Jesus. Stay at the feet of Jesus and stay in tune to his whisper, so that when he speaks to you, you march not to the tune of the public opinion, not to the tune of the headlines, not to what others want, but you're always moving in the vein of what the Holy Spirit is directing your life to do. And that's why I lead with so much passion, because my charisma, my character is reduced by my relationship with Jesus Christ.
Come on, Bishop. I'm grateful for the voice that God, I think, has amplified in you because of a courageous choice to stand for biblical truth, to stand for what you believe in. Billy Graham once said that courage is contagious. It's amazing what happens when a man or a woman is willing to take a stand. The spines of others are often stiffened. You know, I would love just to chat with you a little bit about that, because I think about walking into a room, there's some stats even in the mental health space that when you sit within 25 feet of a high-performing individual, your performance or your outcomes will automatically enhance by 15%. What is it about courage, Bishop, that is so contagious?
I think what's so contagious about courage is when you see men and women that don't mind being disliked. Because to have courage and to possess it, you have to be in a position to be okay with being disliked, being okay with being isolated and alienated because of where you stand. And what makes that so attractive, what makes it so people stand and say, boy, I want to be like him, is because there are so many people that are inferior, and the inferiority complex is based upon the opinions of others. And when you get delivered from people and get delivered from public opinion and get delivered from the thoughts of others, that's all the courage that you need to stand for whatever God has placed on your assignment and whatever room he has given you to stand in. When you can get beyond what people think about it and know that I'm standing representing the things of God, representing what's right, and you can live with yourself and go to bed at night, that's what it motivates others and challenges others to rise to the occasion and be courageous.
Bishop, when I think of courage, sometimes I think a lot of people, when they hear that word, they just think of confrontation, right? Being courageous to confront another person on their belief, on their ideology, whatever it is, but they don't view it through the lens of compassion. And when we talk about racial tension and we talk about the different things, whether it's the color of your skin, whether it's your political party affiliation, whether it's the religion that you believe in, a lot of times in the world that we live in the culture and society now, it's my way or the highway. It's if, hey, if you don't agree with me, then you're wrong and you're being unloving. And so they almost weaponize this idea of love. But love in scripture is, you know, speak the truth in love. This idea that those two things can actually coincide. Speak to just, again, what you're seeing and why we find ourselves in such divided times. But then how do we begin to take the first step toward reconciliation? How do we choose to forgive those who maybe have wronged us, whether it's generational wounds, whether it's something that somebody said, whether it's a disagreement, whatever it might be? What's the first step that we can begin to take to actually live the united life?
Well, we were created in the image of God, and unfortunately, the fall of man has created this division and this distortion of who we are, and we are literally hating ourselves. If I hate my brother and I hate my sister, I hate myself. Why? Because we were all created in the image and likeness of God. Acts 17 and 6 said we are one blood. And that one blood may come from many different nation and ethnic groups, but it's still coming from one, and unity brings us back to God. But the enemy's job is to blind us from the fact that we are one through God. And we're allowing different pigmentations, different languages, and different continents that we come from to make us think that we're different. And the reality is, while we do have differences, and while our pigmentations may be different, while our language may have some differences, we are birthed and conformed and patterned and made from the same God in his image and likeness. And if we can ever get a clue of that and stop allowing the devil to bring us into these deceits and lies, we can start living a life of unity. And my message that I preach every day is what Jesus prayed in John 17, Father, make them one as you and I are one, so that the world would believe that Christ was sent. How can the world ever believe that Jesus was sent when Jesus' people can't even get along, because the most segregated hour of the day, according to Dr. Martin Luther King, is Sunday morning? We're all in our siloed congregations, white congregation, black congregation, Hispanic, Asian congregation, not realizing that we're one church, one band, one sound, honoring God, glorifying the God. And if we cannot come out of our buildings, we're no different from any other group if we don't know how to collaborate and unite and realize that we're a part of the gospel. And I guess just to answer your question of how we go about bringing unity, when I established Bridge Builders, that's what it was all about. God said, you use your voice in the midst of chaos to be the solution, and the solution is compassion. And you got to understand, son, when you build a bridge, bridges get walked over by both sides. So know you're going to have some rough ways to go, because everybody's not going to support where you stand. But at the end of the day, if you keep heralding the message of love, the message of unity, people are going to get it that the only way to be delivered from chaos, calamity, and confusion is to follow the love that leads us to unity and cooperation with one another.
In my master's program, clinical mental health counseling, we are being trained, and the word in counseling is empathy, right? It's different than sympathy. Sympathy is feeling bad for somebody. Empathy is almost trying to put yourself in their shoes, getting outside of the story. Sometimes we have this narrative in our mind about someone, about a different race, whatever it is, about a different political affiliation. We get so stuck in the story that we don't dive into the struggle. Oprah Winfrey, Dr. Bruce Perry back in the day, they had this conversation that turned into a book, and it really, the language has shifted, especially in the mental health space, away from what's the matter with you, what's wrong with you, Bishop, to what happened to you. Better understanding trauma, better understanding different diagnoses in the mental health space to really get to the heart of this story because it's at the struggle. Bishop, speak to the importance of recognizing that the greatest form of empathy is inquiry, asking better questions, making less assumptions to potentially begin to unify ourselves again.
Dr. Zach, just listening to you, I just got an idea for a book that maybe we need to write.
Come on.
Because this is loaded, because let me tell you how we resolve this whole racial war, this conflict, this confusion today. If everybody would just back up, settle down, and do what we're doing right here, have a conversation. Zach, how are you? Kelvin, how are you? What happened? Not what I think happened. Not give you my judgment on what I think. No. What happened, and share it from your perspective. Because no one can tell you my pain like me. I'm experiencing it. I lived it. I walked through it. And instead of us listening to one another, we're talking at one another. And it becomes an argument. It becomes demeaning. It becomes a debate. And when we're all yelling, no one's listening. No one's concerned, because everybody's more concerned about my opinion, where I stand, instead of being sensitive to where everybody is. And I believe that one of the ways to conflict resolution is empathy, to really get outside of your world, step into someone else's world, and intentionally try to understand from their perspective what happened, what caused this, and how we can pull back these layers to help them heal. And there's, again, nothing like presence. You don't have to talk a lot. You don't have to have a lot of comments, because do I take responsibility for what another group or generation did? No, I can't take responsibility for it, but I can promise you that I won't repeat it. I can promise you that I'm going to be a part of the solution and not the problem, that it will continue in this hour, but I'm going to be the voice and the heart around us reasoning together. And Zach, that's where I think it is right now. We just get to a point that we just step outside of our selfishness, our own conceit, and stop worrying about, well, they did it to me. Well, put that aside and be a concern about someone else, and then allow that people group to be concerned and hear your story. Then when we both feel heard, then we can find common ground to be able to lead and help heal others.
Come on, Bishop. We're preaching now. Goodness, man. That, it makes me emotional just to hear that story, just because the Holy Spirit prompted you just to simply show up, make your presence known, live out that truth, live out that love. And the impact, the seeds that were sown, the impact that you've probably had since, just continuing to maintain those relationships where people are like, you know what? There's something different about that man. There's something different about Bishop Kelvin Kobaris. And let me say this, my friend, I see that difference every day. And I'm so grateful for the difference that God is making in and through you because of that very thing. I want to kind of wrap up our conversation with two final questions, Bishop. The first one is this: in the cultural hour that we find ourselves in, you are a man of deep thought. You are a man of deep prayer. And I want to ask, what is your prayer, especially for my generation, the next generation that's coming up through? Legacy is not just something you leave behind. It's something you put into motion. What's the prayer that God would continue to put into motion through your life for my generation to come?
The mistake of the previous generation, which we love them and we stand on their shoulders, is a lot of time it's been ignorance and learned behavior from the generation ahead of them. And sometimes a lot of things they practice was not because they really believed it, but that's what you were taught. That's what was modeled before you. So you practice this level of preference or prejudice or even racism or superiority over other groups and different feelings that you have based upon how you grew up and how you were taught. However, I believe that your generation, the generation that's coming up, is the game changer generation, because while in previous generations, the knowledge and the intellectual opportunities and exposure was not there like it is now, this particular generation, because it's been exposed to so much, and if you hold a phone in your hand, you're introduced to the entire global world and can influence it, that this particular generation has a platform and an opportunity to first glean from the generations before you, learn what was good, what to do, learn the things not to do, and now to take the good of that and make it foundational. The bad, throw those out, and then take that along with your own energy and your passion and innovation and create a collaboration between the old and the new to birth the present. And that present says that while we respect God, we respect country, we're great patriots, we're not going to love a flag and a country over the people that reside in it. We're not going to lift up symbols over the heart that we need to have for the people that represent those symbols. And so it's very, very important that your generation is the generation that leads the answer to Jesus' prayer, that we actually become one and to show all the previous generations that it's possible, that I can be different. We can live in different communities. We can have different opinions, preferences, and all those different things, but still not hate one another, still not have to fight against one another, but realize that we're on the same team and not against one another. I'm excited about your generation because your generation is the game-changer generation that's going to influence the past, the present, to lead us into a great future.
Come on, Bishop. That excites me. I'm ready to keep running. So grateful for those that we get to stand on the shoulders of, like yourself, like my dad, like so many other mentors and friends that have invested in my life. I'm just grateful for opportunities to walk into rooms that I don't belong in, but at the same time, I'm grateful to be in. Bishop, I want to close this way. I always ask the question, just a final pressing word that God has placed on your heart for a specific people group. And so today, who I want you to speak into the lives of those who have maybe been hurt, who have been wounded, who come into this conversation and they hear this and they're encouraged, but yet they're still broken. There's still a lot of hang-ups and different things that they're going through in life. Maybe they're holding on to hatred, bitterness, rage. I would love just a final word of hope and encouragement for them as to why fellowship, why forgiveness, why faithfulness matters to live the Built Different life.
Well, I respond to that. Just a few weeks ago, there was outrage in our country over a meme that was sent out. And of course, it depicted political leaders in a very egregious and disrespectful and disgusting way. And of course, I did not immediately respond because of my role and my position. I always want to make sure that I don't respond in emotions. I don't respond in outrage or chaos, but I always respond in the compassions of the words of Christ. So I waited. And because I waited 10 hours after it happened, I was attacked. I was advised not to respond, but I'm like, I have to because of where I stand. And standing in the middle, I got to say something. And I made a response, and then there was a podcaster that I won't name him that took that opportunity to attack me and took that opportunity to use clickbait to turn my community, the African-American community, against me. So now they just cried out about races and racism and who's hateful and hatred. But then you turn right around, and after someone formed an opinion of me, instead of them calling me, which he had an access to do that, and have a conversation, he took the social media and attacked me, attacked my family, called me coon, called me everything but my name, and others joined him. People in my community came on my page, degrading me, and they've never met me. And I just said, wow, here they are saying that they're feeling hurt because of how they've been depicted in a meme or how racism is apparent. But then you turn around and somebody that looks just like you, you attack without giving the respect of a conversation. And the Lord showed me right then. He said, that's the bigger picture. The enemy is blindsiding people because hurt people hurt people. And when you don't know what to do with your hurt, you will mismanage it and you will create more havoc and chaos than you do peace and healing. And what I want to say to a broken people that might be listening today, whether you're black, white, Hispanic, Caucasian, whatever you are, I know our world is not perfect. I know we got some things we need to work on. I know there's been some things that have been said. You've been mistreated. You've been maligned. You've been underserved on different levels. I know we got a lot of different opinions. But at the end of the day, if you're not a part of the solution, you're the problem. And this is why it's so important that instead of taking your pain to create more peril and taking your hurt to create more havoc, use your pain and your peril and your platform to have conversations, to reach out to other people, to say what happened, to say, you know, how can I help you with that, to hear and to pray together and to resolve that we're going to unite against the hatred, the bigotry, and all of the things that create a divide, and be the voice of reason. Don't allow your hurt to create other confusion, but use that hurt as a witness that instead of allowing my hurt to dictate my decisions or dictate my preferences or dictate how I treat people, I use that hurt as a moment first to become healed and to become whole so that now I'm in a position to share witness and to heal other people and to help them come into a place that they can be healed and unify and use love and not hatred to bring about a difference and bring us into unity.
Come on, that's a word, Bishop. Bishop, I'm grateful for you. I'm grateful for your voice. I know that leadership can feel lonely at times, But I want you to hear this from me. You're never alone. You got people in your corner who will literally go to battle for you, be the first ones and the last ones there, my friend. So I'm grateful for you. Thank you for all that you do. And thank you for allowing God to use you in a mighty way. Where can our audience members go, though, to find out more about you, to find out more about New Life Church International, to find out more about the Bridge Builders Network?
Well, I mean, you can follow me. I'm on all social media, from Instagram, Facebook, under my name. You can Google New Life Church International, Plant City, Florida. You can follow me there. If you want to be a part of Bridge Builders, just reach out to me, Google, get in touch with our office, and we would love for you to join forces. We're about to relaunch that in a great way, because in the midst of this dark, divided hour, we're about to step right in the middle of it and build bridges in this midst of this chaos, so that we can come together and be the people that God has designed us to be.
Bishop, Dad and I, all of us at AACC, we stand with you. We run with you, my friend. Love you and appreciate you. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks for listening to Life, Love, Faith, and Family, a production of the American Association of Christian Counselors. If you enjoyed today's broadcast and want to help equip the church to provide Christian mental health care, visit AACCFoundation.org. Your donation ensures this program and your station stay on the air. On behalf of our co-hosts, Dr. Tim Clinton and his son, Zach, this is Jim Kress. We look forward to having you with us again next time. May God bless you.